Right, we're recording a GMBM podcast. We're in actually the press room in Pietra Ligure. Got Rick McLaughlin from the EWS and Duncan Philpott, who's you're the photographer for the EWS, but master statistician.
The brains of the operation, I think, is fair to call Duncan Philpott. Logistics king, numbers king.
So you might hear some noises from downstairs. We are in Italy, so there's bound to be some church bells and scooters and all sorts, but we'll try and keep it fairly quiet.
We are in what was once, I think, a nautical themed bar that's been converted to our press room for
the
week.
I like it, yeah. I like the pink paint on the walls especially.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this weekend's race, Pietra Ligure, EWS, the second round of the year. Of course, we had
Zermatt,
the name of it.
Yeah.
And we've got finale next weekend, but we had a slightly mixed race. We had a dry start, it actually rained the night of before the race, but still conditions were pretty good in the morning. I think slippy on the rocks, but the dirt was pretty good, I was hearing. And actually I was stood on top of stage three, getting ready to look at that queen stage, and we had a massive downpour just before the sort of fastest ladies and men dropped in. So that did affect the day.
Yeah, definitely. I was at the bottom of stage two, and definitely the sort of the dramas that were unfolding were caused by really dry sections of trail. But I think the rocks here tend to hold on to a bit of moisture, and then they got obviously muddy and slick, and a few big crashes early on. We started seeing some punctures and stuff. But Dunk, you were actually shooting up there. What was it like from where you were sat?
I think after last week the last round with only two stages, the riders were coming out here swinging pretty hard from the offset, and to see people making a lot of mistakes and a lot of mechanicals so early on, especially from big names like Robin Warner, who are known for being pretty consistent racers.
Yeah.
That came as quite a surprise.
I think a lot of people overthought it, I think, a wee bit as well. Do you know what I mean? Because it was a lot of rain, but the stages were so dry. We had like a second summer all week here that sometimes when it rains, people can overthink things slightly. And there's not been a lot of racing this year either, so I guess the racecraft was maybe a bit ring rusty in places.
So, do we know actually what happened to Warner? Just a crash and hit his head, broke his mat?
Broke his derailleur clean off, which is fairly inhibiting for someone.
Yeah, if you're going at the speed he's going, that's a pretty big crash, isn't it? There was a lot of talk about Robin as well, and Robin's one of those racers that you can tell from virtually the first, from shakedown, a happy looking Robin Waller is a fast Robin Waller.
It's a big day as well. A lot was 2,000 metres climbing.
Big day.
Yeah.
The Queen stage particularly, we're talking 8 minutes plus even for the fastest riders. So that's a big old challenge. Unfortunately, Waller didn't make it that far. Martin Mays, had a crash on that stage, quite a nasty little injury to his wrist or his hand, by the looks of it. So stitches, didn't finish the race. We're sort of hoping, we know Martin's a gnarly guy, he's pretty tough. I find it hard to believe he's not going to race next weekend, but I guess we'll see how bad that is.
Yeah, I think anyone else you'd say a lot of stitches in their hand, racing somewhere as fast and rough as finale, probably. You'd probably call it quits, but Martin Mays has proved time and time again that he's just about as tough a competitor as there is, isn't there? And I wouldn't bet against him racing.
Absolutely. And I think it just comes as a surprise, someone like him who is absolutely always up there, always consistent. It always strikes me as a surprise that these top riders, the likes of Sam Hill, who unfortunately is not here, don't seem to get more mechanicals, more punctures and more injuries. They manage it throughout a whole season. And you kind of wonder if the overly long off-season has led to the slight doubting of where the race pace lies for these top guys, because the results are pretty mixed from start to finish.
Certainly that's what I chatted to Eddie Masters when he came through the final time check yesterday, and that's exactly what he was saying. He was saying that by the time we get to the Liguarian coast, if you're looking at Eddie and Matt Walker, they'll have raced most, if not all, of the World Cups and all of the EWS. And you know where the speed is, you know where you're riding, and to ride these trails without that knowledge is a bit of a different thing.
Yeah, we are seeing a lot of French riders in the top of the results. We've seen them racing a bit this year compared to most other nationalities. Obviously, they're always up there anyway, so it's hard to say that they've gotten any, much of an advantage anyway. But yeah.
I think building on that point as well, you consider how many of those top French racers come from Nice. just along the coastline in the opposite direction to Fernando Nuri.
Similar kind of stony ground. Yeah. I mean, probably more stony when you look at some of those downhill tracks like Pei, but it's that sort of really slippery limestone. And we had this conversation, I think, between us, saying how, you know, you almost expect, or people who come from wet countries are expected to do well when it rains. But actually, the South France, some of these tracks are really slippery. I know I've talked about this in the past with Sam Hill as well. Apparently, those trails in Perth are like almost gravelly. They're really slippery. So
slippery, isn't it? That's like, I think when you look at Sam Hill Ride, that style comes from growing up somewhere where traction isn't necessarily abundant. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's a really interesting point. I mean, we've talked about this last night over dinner and stuff, that why, when it rains, does it change people's psychology so much? And, you know, there's a lot of, you're just looking down the results now, there's a lot of riders there that you could say are from slightly inclement corners of the world that really just didn't seem to switch on yesterday. And I don't know, I mean, Neil, you've raced at a lot higher level than either of us. Does that, did you like it when it rained?
Yeah, it felt normal. I quite like the fact when other people started panicking. I thought that was great because, you know, as a junior growing up in the UK, you race most of the year in wet conditions. So it's quite normal, I suppose. But I don't know. I also think for people like Samuel, then it's like being good on a bike is just being good on a bike. It doesn't matter where it is or what, you know, what the conditions are like. But it's really hard to tell. We saw Jesse Melamed coming in, you know, British Columbia. You'd expect him to be pretty good, but I mean, that's kind of different types of trails. Again, you know, you expect the mud over there to be, I don't know, a bit more sort of soily than when you get wet conditions over here. It's just out and out slippy.
I think it's that limestone, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just not really anywhere else in the abundance that you get here.
What did you make of Melamed's ride yesterday? Seventh place, but with a stage win?
I thought it was impressive. I sometimes feel like I can be a bit harsh with Jesse. We've seen him win, and I sort of sometimes think, he can be too inconsistent. We've seen him have some big crashes, and we saw it on the first stage yesterday. So he's coming into this race on a high, and he's kind of thrown it away on the first stage. He's lost 17 seconds the day either.
That was a good crash as well. The POV of that is in the highlights.
I saw that.
Which are on GMBN now. But
thanks, Rick.
That's not seamless plug-in. he basically stopped his bike via the head tube, I think, on a tree. You know, big crash, lost a lot of time. The stages here are interesting in the, I mean, you come to finale, it's always fast, but it's always really rough. Slightly smoother stages here, but very, very high speeds, which means that when you do have a crash, you lose a lot of time getting back up to speed, and that will have cost them, but stage win as well, so speed's there.
Yeah, not a bad stage, actually. The Queen Stage 3, that came 35th there. So other than those two stages, we'd expect him to be quite a lot higher in that seventh.
He's always been, you know, zero or hero. to kind of put it one way. Like, you look at his overall finishes over the years, Remy Govan typically always finishing better than him.
Yeah.
But that would be because Jesse would maybe post a better race finish than Remy one week and then totally wipe out the following week. And
Jesse, I think, is really interesting because he's someone who's, I mean, we used to see this with Mays. Mays used to be really checkers or wreckers, and then he sort of wind the throttle back a notch and find that speed that wins races. And I keep on thinking Jesse's on the cusp of that. I think he really is, actually.
Well, I think so, yeah.
You know, he could really, I mean, we've only got one race left this season, sadly, finale the Guru this weekend coming, and I think it'll be super interesting to see what he does. He had a really good ride there at Trophy of Nations last year. So just looking up the sheets ahead of him, Kevin McHale, another really solid ride. Eddie Masters, fifth. He's happy with that, isn't he?
Yeah, it was good. He sort of, for me, maybe flew under the radar a little bit yesterday. But yeah, some really good stages in there. Not so good on the Queen stage, but was he losing 10 seconds the day there? But it's an 8-minute long trail, so it didn't, you know, didn't lose too much time in the scheme of things, to be fair.
I think it's easy to forget, given how long the off-season was, that, you know, he quit out at the end of last year with that huge wrist injury in North Star.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, opted to not race the entire New Zealand race series, so didn't really have any of that speed accumulation there. Comes into Zermatt and unfortunately has a mechanical and crashes straight away. So it's probably his first kind of like clean race, and to come in at
he's definitely one of the best all-round bike racers of a generation, I think, for me, Eddie. He's just, I mean, he can just jump on a downhill bike and be right in the mix at a World Cup, and then come to an EWS, do a 50k, 2,000 meter day, and be right in the mix there as well. Not many people can do that.
Well, you would say Martin Mays is obviously that as well, but Jack Moyer, arguably.
On the Canyon, that's a big, big ride. First EWS podium, only second race as a full-time EWS rider. Just great to watch as well on a bike.
He was he lining second up to the last two stages? So he came into pits, went back out. I think he said he wanted to play it safe. And he did, he got third, but only second and a, no, 2 seconds off second place. So arguably that cost him that place. And actually he was only just ahead, like, what was it, 800ths ahead of Dimitri Tordo. Yeah. So
that's a great ride from Dimitri as well, actually. Yeah. Dimitri's... he's another guy who seemed to just be enjoying this place all weekend. And I think, I mean, Moyer coming into that team, Nikolai leaving, that's a, you know, that's a big switch in the world of Dimitri Tordo. And we saw them in Zermatt, he and Jack were together for most of the weekend, walking stages, walking a track. There's clearly a good relationship there. Yeah. And they both seem genuinely made up for each other. So I think a happy Canyon camp.
I think he must have helped Jack a lot here, understanding the terrain, because it's easy to forget that Jack has never come to this Ligurian coastline before.
That's
to race
true, really.
And the rest of these people, you know, look at Dei, he raced in Punta Ala, the first ever EWS as a junior. You look at Flo, similar story. They have like 7 years of experience racing these trails. I think it makes Jack's ride even more remarkable when you kind of consider his
I'm gonna bowl a factoid question at you, Duncan, just to test you. Is that the highest finish a Trek Factory racing bike has been in the elite men's race?
For Florian? For Trek Factory?
For Trek?
Yeah.
I believe
so. I'm going to have to think who we would have had prior.
Must be.
I mean, Timo, obviously.
In the elite men's, though. Rury got fourth.
He got fourth in Petson.
He got fourth to Liam Petson.
Okay, let's swing with that.
So, yeah. There were some question marks floating over Flo's move to Trek. That was, I always thought he used to, at the races for Canyon, he roomed with Larry, who's no longer manages Canyon. And I always used to think that Larry was a big part of Flo's sort of confidence. And when he went to Trek, I wasn't sure if that being in place would affect him at all. But Enduro is really funny in that you get suckered into sort of, you know, performances here and there, and there are other performances that people just creep up the timesheets.
Yeah.
And Florian yesterday was just superb.
He won the final stage as well, which was a pretty tough one. I actually spoke to him on, you know, Shakedown Day for a tech video and asked him about his bike, and he did seem even then a little unsure about his setup. So yeah, he didn't seem that confident to me. So good to see him up there, but. They did win by 20 and a half seconds.
We've been quietly working up this overall to just what a ride from Adrian that was. Didn't put a foot wrong all day. And when we've seen him win in the past, he's not unlike Sam Hill, actually. He's unflustered. He doesn't seem to he just seems to be ticking things off. Yep. He came back to time check after the Queen stage. I think he went first, second, and third in the first three stages. Then he came back to time check and he said he was putting on a more aggressive rear tire because the stages in the afternoon were slightly steeper. He needed a bit more grip and he was just chilling. Yep, that's what I'm going to do. Take them off as well and won the race by 20 seconds. Huge performance.
Huge margin when you consider last year we were down to like 1 second winning victories.
We had 2 tenths on North Star, didn't we?
It wasn't uncommon to see the race coming down to a needle point on the last stage. So yeah, he just tore that one apart.
Jack is listening downstairs. He just texted me. Justin Leov won Glen Trust EWS 2015.
And he came second at Whitfordy.
Well, that shows my
producer on the line.
That was pre-me. That's why I'm going to put that one down to. But yeah, I mean, that's Adrian was just. I think that whole Lapierre team, Nico, Isabeau, Yannick, Adrian, like. They just seem so relaxed. The bikes seem to be working so well. That's a huge result.
But before we move on to a pretty interesting women's race, any other notable rides in the men's, I guess?
Reese Verner won the Queen's stage, young Canadian, who really sort of I guess his breakthrough ride was really Trophy of Nations last season, hanging on behind Jesse Melamed and Remy Govan. What a result to beat an entire men's field on the Queen stage. Really quite long, really physical stage, by a good margin
as well. Quite convincingly. So he's an interesting one because he comes from an XC racing background, whereas so much of the men's field comes from a more downhill orientated background. It's a bit more in line with what we see in the women's racing, where they're all an XC-related background, but slowly acquiring those more technical skills. Back home, he's riding with the likes of Finn Ars, Casper Woolley, really fast racers in that local area. And he's only going to get better on the tech, so I expect him to be inching his way up.
Hey, he'd be one I would be tempted to watch in the off-season as well, because there's, I don't know how his deal is set up with Kona, but you know, you could see one of the larger teams looking at him and going, this is exactly the sort of talent that we need to be signing. And that's a great way to advertise, put yourself in the shop window, isn't it? I'm just looking back through the top 20. Elliot Heap's 16th. That's a really strong ride from Elliot.
Yeah, it looks good. When you see him, he's a super skillful rider, but actually he's starting to look really fast as well when you see him out on the trail on stages. Lachlan Blair had, he got 10th on the Queen stage, so he probably went down before the heavy rain, so that helps a little bit.
And he was in 12th overall on the stage,
He had 16th on the first stage anyway, so it was a strong ride.
Huge talent and great to see. The Sun guy's another good day. Teo Galli, 13th, and then Kevin McHale, 6th.
Possibly the worst kit on the tracks.
Well, your words, Neil, not mine, but I don't know, I quite like it. Really? It's got a certain French flair about it.
True.
I'm all over that that Lapierre. We're going to talk kits now. Let's get geeky. That Lapierre Zip Collective.
Yeah.
Sort of black and red affair is.
Yeah. It's a good looking team. When you look at the EWSE as well and how strong, you know, you've got Nico, you've got Yannick Pontal, Adrian Day, Isabeau Couturier. It's a pretty strong team.
Yeah, let's talk about Isabeau though. In the women's race, you have to go back to finale 2018 to find EWS that she didn't win.
So she's coming in injured. It sounds pretty nasty, torn ligaments in her ankle. Do we know how she got those?
A couple of bones done as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like a mess.
Yeah, it sounds like a mess. And basically the doctors told her, put it this way, you can't make it any worse.
It didn't look good, to be fair. And actually what we saw in the results is she really sort of lost the race on the Queen stage. So this is, you know, for her it was 9:20. And that's a long time to be riding on a rough track with an ankle that's not in a good shape. So she said she seemed very happy at the end. But yeah, it must have been a tough day out for her.
We saw Isabeau ride with in Whistler with that injured knee. Like, she is a tough competitor. I have no doubt that, like, if there was a chance that she could start, she would have started. And she talked about she was changing her pedal setup. She was like, you know, basically she could ride everything as long as her left foot stayed clipped in. And she's full on. But I think Melanie Pujan sent a real message yesterday. And we talked to Chris Ball. And he was saying at the time check when they were getting ready to leave, he's actually got a photo of Melanie ahead of Isabeau, and there's about a couple of bike lengths and they're both just holding on the fence, and there's no talk going on. There's, you know, they're both in a race and they're both aware of how fast they're going to have to go. I think it's, no disrespect to anybody, I think it's been a while since anybody's really pushed Isabeau that hard. I think, you know, her riding it 8 or 9 tenths is often, you know, she has a bit of a pocket. But yeah, Melanie, I mean, and you just watched those highlights.
I'd say
she's thrown that bike.
She looked really fast all day. And she's won the last two races she's done, EWSE and Zermatt, and coming here to win her first ever EWSE.
Which is quite a thing to get off an e-bike onto a normal enduro bike again and, you know, beat the world's number one, Isabeau Couturier. So another one that you'd have to say there must be teams looking at as we head into this off-season.
Definitely. I wonder if she saw somewhat, you know, chink in the armour with Isabeau after the French National Championships, where Morgan Sharp managed to beat her. It sort of dethrones that. No one, you know, it just realigns the goals, doesn't it? It's like, Isabeau, maybe she can be beaten, and people start to believe a bit more.
Do you think that, weirdly, I remember seeing it in Downhill with Rachel Atherton, it's almost weirdly a bit of a relief that when that winning streak comes to an end, it's like, right,
Yeah, I can't imagine being in the start gate and the expectation is you have to win or you're a disappointment is going to be.
I think it would do things for you. Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about perfect seasons and you're coming into the last stage of the last race and you're like, wow, you can't mess it up now.
No.
It's tough because, I mean, I've done that before to different racers that, as a journalist, like, if they're winning them that comfortably, the only thing you've got to talk to them about really is the perfect season. Mm. Is it on? Is it on? Is it on? And you can see that look in their eyes of, I play this in my head like 24 hours a day. I don't need you asking me about it. But but Isabeau, I mean, she'll be back. That's not a big issue.
Well, she'll be back next weekend is the question.
Well, there's rumours circulating that she won't be racing in Finale Liguria. If I were her and I was suspect about the ankle, I'd probably put that rumour out myself, and then if I don't, it's no surprise. If I do, people don't expect much of you. I'm just hypothesising. Morgan Schaar, French champion, third. That's a great result on flat pedals.
Yeah, I asked her actually the bottom of stage four. I sort of went to the end of the stage to interview the riders, and I actually had to run halfway down the bottom. And it was flipping hard work even trying to walk down that trail. There was these ruts that were just completely blown out. And the rut took you off the track, so you would have to get off the bike and get back on. And there was, perfect dirt, and then a horrendously slippy bit of dirt, and then a rut going off to nowhere. It looked really tricky, and I sort of asked her, said, is it advantage to be on flat pedals? And she said the right thing to me. I was like, well, not really, because that's all I'd ride, so it's, But it did look like a really difficult trail to ride in those conditions. And she had a good ride, consistent ride all day, actually.
I think what's interesting when you look at that women's top five overall, all French riders, but it feels like that secondary level of French riders, same in the men's, your Estelle Charles, your Morgan Jauniers, they're now beaten. I mean, there's Andréanne Lanthier-Nadeau in sixth, Noga Carême in seventh, Ray Morrison 10th, Anita Gehrig 11th. They're really just, I mean, is that because the French have raced more than anyone else this season? It can't just be that, can it?
I don't know. It's such a hard thing to try and predict why one nation's better than another. But yeah, interesting. In the men's and women's race, we've seen a couple of riders on big teams quite low down the field, and I mean, it's a difficult time at the moment, but there'll be all sorts of contract negotiations up soon, which is going to be, the best times is hard, but when there hasn't been much racing and you've not been doing very well, I don't envy these riders going into this off-season.
I don't want to mention names, but I did used to work with a certain former British national champion, downhiller, who basically always told me that you could get a three-year deal. It was only the last year of that contract that mattered. So I think, especially given the year that we've had, a lack of racing, we're hearing all sorts of whispers about different brands wanting to change contracts, wanting to move things along, changing setups and stuff. I mean, Pietra and Finale, if you're going to have a leg to stand on as a professional racer, I think you've really got to put in.
I'd say there's two sides of the coin. There's people like Day, Nicolai and Moya have proven their worth in very difficult circumstances. They've come out and they've performed when they had to, because they only get three chances this year and they deserve what they get out of it.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I wondered if it was worth talking about is something that we've had a lot of chat about, and you've done videos on GMBN about bike setup. We saw Jack Moyer on quite a small size, large canyon. Eddie Masters also riding a medium pivot, who said that he actually gets a lot of DMs on social media from people asking him why he rides a medium. Is there, I'm thinking about buying one. Does a medium ride better than a large? And both of those guys, neither of them are small, but both of them saying that it's all about getting the bike turned quicker.
Yeah, so I did a bike check with Jack Moyer. I actually did the sort of filmed most of it before he turned up, did an interview at the end. And I just presumed it was an XL, looking at the size of Jack. But no, so it's a large. He's got like a stack underneath the head tube to bring everything up at the front, and a load of spaces underneath his stem as well. So he basically likes the bike being tipped back and slacked out as much as he can, really, with that bike. It's fairly short, around 150, probably 160 fork on it. And he sort of said it's, compared to downhill, where you'll know every inch of the track before you race, with enduro, you'll do one run and then you'll race. And there'll be a lot of times when you're improvising, you'll get to
just reacting to stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just easier to move a smaller bike around in those situations.
I remember years ago, he was on a World Cup hot seat somewhere, and the bikes were on the rack beside the hot seat. And he was on a Bergamont then, and his bars were up like massive amount. Like, I mean, massive amount, everything's relative, about like 50, 60 mil.
Yeah,
on spacers, and he's always like that higher front. But I do think you look at the videos of him on social media, the bike looks really small, doesn't it?
I think that would have been the race where both Eddie and Jack were teammates.
Yeah, that's right.
And Cairns, would I be right in thinking that Jack was 13th or something? Yeah. So, not seeing Eddie had qualified second at that race.
See, numbers. That's why you hear numbers.
And had that massive pressure from that swap to flats last minute. Because of a rain-affected qualifying. And it's always interesting to see the riders that just have so much natural talent that don't let a mistake in a race run slow them down. They don't, like, make more mistakes and get ever more cautious. They're just still throwing caution to the wind.
That was
the
last. That was the last World Cup G1, and he won it on a pair of borrowed shoes.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That was also the first ever World Cup I covered as a field reporter.
It was the one where Adam Brayton fell off,
right, and the spectator took his bike
and promptly broke his neck on the whoops.
Yeah, breaks the other way around.
I remember telling somebody that was the last time I'd ever do that job, and I'm still here.
Field reporting mountain.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think one of the most interesting setups, if anybody's listening to listen, they get a chance to get a look at it, is Martin Mays's GT. When you see that bike and you start looking at it with a bit of a bike geek's eye, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't really add up, but obviously it works. It's one of the fastest bikes in the world. But
did a bike check on it, and it looks sort of old fashioned almost. 150 mil travel front and rear. So I think if you went and did a survey around the pits, I think 99% of people would have at least 10 mil more travel on the front. And he's just saying, nope. It's mixed wheel size and it shouldn't be. So he's stuck a smaller wheel in the back to sort of just sit it down a bit in the back. Smaller rotors, got 180 mil rotors. That is many like people don't know. With Saint brakes, so running the big Dino brakes, but
he's run the Saints. That's interesting.
And he says he doesn't drag his brakes, so he doesn't need 200 mil rotors.
Because those Saints,
it's quite evident he doesn't drag his brakes.
But those Saints, the power delivery on those, it's like a brick through a plate glass window, isn't
so
it? Like,
so it might not be a bad. I can't say it is a bad.
The guy knows what he's doing. Exactly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So in a small cassette, a 1045 XTR, I believe, cassette on the back of it, which goes against everything you've been told in the media that you need a 1052 or whatever it is. He's running that smaller cassette, tighter ratios. But 32 chainring, I believe, so quite a small chainring, I suppose.
What type? They're on Schwalbe's, aren't they? We're on. We got Vittoria sponsored the event this weekend, so we got this rather good box of tires from Vittoria. And when we're fitting them, it's amazing how far that sort of enduro tire has come. And that is what 3 or 4 years ago you would have called a downhill tire. Really, I was looking at Craig, Adrian Day's. Craig Miller, Adrian Day's mechanic, was showing me the Michelin tires they're running, and they're the slowest rebounding tire I have ever come across. And it kind of feels like everything's just getting incrementally more aggressive.
But harder to pedal around, you know, a big day out. You've got to be flipping fit to be able to pedal a bike around like that.
Funnily enough, that's what Pagey told me.
Came down a bit past, sat down past me only a minute into stage two. I think he was still feeling the climb.
That's a big day, like 2,000 meters, 50k. Do you think that's where EWS should be heading? You think, Nick? Because it's been a long time since we had a day that size.
I like it, especially as a spectator. It's good to see how the riders deal with a very tough day. As a racer, you know, if I went back 5 years, I probably would have liked it as well, to be fair. I quite like the big challenges. And I was stood at the top of the Queen stage when it was raining. And it's more telling in the sort of how people adjust to that mentally than it is actually what they're doing on their bike. And same with a big day out, really. You know, we spoke to Robin Wallner, and someone who's in really good shape, you know, they're keen for it. They're up for the challenge, and not everyone is quite the same. But you know, you're a pro enduro racer. You're supposed to be.
And this is it. Yeah, there's kind of nowhere to hide, really, is there?
And if you pull Adrian Day out of those results, the times were still incredibly tight, as you mentioned earlier.
I was gonna say,
second back, so it doesn't affect the excitement of the racing as far as people are just too tired to perform on a stage. They're still pushing really hard.
It's remarkable. The times behind, you take Adrian's result out, as you say, the times are very, very close.
And we saw in, actually, you know, we had some guys up filming on stage three and we saw some big mistakes. You know, at the end of a very physical stage, some of the riders a bit low down in the pack were still trying to charge super hard by the looks of it, having some, you know, big old crashes. It just shows the, you know, the fortitude to be able to ride an 8 minute plus stage hard from start to finish. And actually, I said it again, I saw Martin Mays come out the top and he looked really conservative, like he was almost save, you know, metering his energy for the whole of that stage compared to some people who were charging really, really hard. Wynn was one of them. He looked like he was going so hard. Actually, Day was as well, to be fair. Adrian was flat out. He made a bit of a mistake, overshot the second corner, but didn't lose many time.
Adrian Day, he's like watching him on those highlights, he's like a mini Nico, isn't he? Like, he's
down
just,
to a team.
Yeah, even just so efficient and so assured of where he's going and where the bike is going to be, what line it's going to be on, that it doesn't look rushed. Yeah. It just looks millimetre perfect.
I mean, you can tell he's certainly Nico's protégé, even to things like the way they plan practice. It's not uncommon for the mechanic to ride the same size bike as Adrian, so that while on the course, they could swap out to a 10 mil higher fork or a shock, you know, and they would change components, the wheels, the tyres. Yeah. You know, obviously tyres are on wheels, but, you know, everything's interchangeable. So if he's midway down a stage and he's not feeling something on his setup, there's usually something towards the other end of the scale on the mechanic's bike. They'll swap him out.
And that's what we saw Nico do in downhill. You know, that approach to the bike being a total system and an extension of him. And that, you know, there's that whole thing about, you know, like the Brits were in the bar, but Nico was, he had a dyno in the back of his van that he was working on, shock valve and stuff like that. That just, you can see in Adrian, it's in there. It's
marginal gains before it was a thing.
But on the flip side, Martin May is a man that typically never touches his setup. In practice, pretty much just does one continuous run, top to bottom of a stage, never stops, does that, and then...
He's not a big walker of courses, is he, Martin?
No.
Either. He just rides it, and then that's in his head, and on he cracks. Whereas I'd say, Adrian...
I would say he's probably one of the more relaxed riders, Martin. He's always happy to chat, and I saw him on the night before the race just having a barbecue in the pits. I guess you've got to make racing fun. I think that works for most people. If they enjoy it, then they'll probably do better. But it's interesting to see how people approach it.
But then you look at Sam Hill as well, and that's a very similar vibe. It's a small team. He and the manager are very, very close, and they just keep it small. They keep themselves to themselves. They eat by themselves. They, it's just building that whole sort of comfort level of like, okay, we're here to do a job, but that doesn't mean to say it's stressful. And that obviously works for Mays, but at the same time, Lapierre Zip, I mean, I got to the bottom of stage two yesterday, the second sort of group of teams and stuff, like team staff to arrive there, were the Lapierre Zip guys who were racing the day before in EWSC that were going up to watch their riders perform. And there's definitely a very like cohesive group of people that have come together there.
They're at the bottom of stage four as well, actually. They weren't actually on the stage at all. Where they finished the stage, it was quite a steep sort of run out, and I was trying to stop riders bombing down this, down to the liaison, and Nico and Yannick were there just hanging out, eating a pizza, and they came through, finished, quick chat, and off you went. It was interesting.
Well, we should talk about the EWSE race as well, and Nico Video getting that win.
Yeah.
That feels like a duly deserved another page in the history books, really, doesn't it?
I would probably put myself, I love e-bikes, I don't care what people say about them, but as far as e-bike racing goes, I was to be convinced, shall I say. I was sort of in the middle, I didn't know what to expect from it. And especially from this round, obviously, I'm here, I wasn't at Zermatt, but I've ridden some of the tracks. I went and watched it and it looked brilliant. I want a part of it. It looked like a really great day out on a bike. And we've seen again that the cream rises to the top, and we've seen some amazing bike riding in the men's and women's fields. And I think, wow, that is legitimately great. And people, at home watching the videos, actually the video's been really popular on the NBN, but if you put show it to the mountain bike crowd, you still get some of that backlash. Yeah. But I think when people actually see it, and this, it's still got a lot of time to evolve, of course, but I was really impressed with that racing.
The race in the e-bike category, and it's, we you know, from the start, we've, to be honest, and like, you know, we don't know what it's going to end up being, but we've got to put these races on, we've got to put different courses on, we've got to talk to the riders, talk to the teams, see what they envisage. This was, this course here in Pietroligure, it was very different from what we put on in Zermatt, and I mean, yeah, we had the liaisons here were almost as technical as the
park stages, you know? I was dabbing up the liaison. Yeah. To get up
tripoding
the
is not a crime. We need to get past this as a sport. But
for most riders that visit here on a normal bike, you kind of associate the riding with a long tarmac drag. If you were going to pedal or you would shuttle, but there are so many linking single tracks, and on the e-bikes, it's been great to be able to include those in the race loops. And then the riders went out and smashed out 9 stages. Can you imagine nine stages?
2 of those uphill.
2 of those are uphill. The shortest of which is still the same length probably as Wyndham downhill track. You're knocking out 9 of them in a day.
But it's interesting because Pietra, like, this was around brand new EWS, obviously brand new EWSE. It came about at the very last minute, and, you know, the local government here got behind it, and part of their key message is they really see themselves as at the forefront of e-bike trails, as an e-bike venue. And I mean, those, you know, the trails behind where we're staying in the Agra Turismo are all built by, you know, local legend Nico. And like, I just think it's exciting to be on the ground whilst this is developing, and whilst this is, because I mean, people our age, like, we miss that kind of really fundamental sort of mountain biking development, its identity, really, like early 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited to see how it develops, and I want to do it. I would, you know, I want to get a bike and get up there. And
well, you're faster than Tanny Seagrave, I've heard.
Well, so yeah, marginally. I'll take it. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next year with it all.
I mean, being trackside with that one, watching the way that someone like Nico Vulio handles an e-bike down a track, you wouldn't believe that he had something with the additional weight in that everyone says you can't ride a bike on this, they're not good at descending. It was those, I saw more people on the e-bikes because there was a similar shared stage pulling up for this heinous gap over jagged limestone on narrow single track that was so sketchy on the e-bikes, and they were on the normal bikes in that stage of the race.
It's
and
flat out, that's the thing, the racing is so fast. But let's talk about this weekend coming up then, Bluegrass EWS finale, Ligure.
I was going to say,
it's interesting because I had this thought earlier on that normally the time of year when we all start talking about finale, you have a year's worth of racing in the books and you know exactly what races you're looking at and what's up for grabs. We had Trophy of Nations here last year, which was a bit of a step into the unknown, but you know, you knew what teams were, you know, looking strong beforehand. And this season with, I mean, okay, he was in the top 10, but Melamed off the podium, winner at round 1. Mays injured, some question marks over how he's going to be able to race. Cordurier injured, if she's going to race. It kind of feels like it's all to play for, really, to use a great sporting cliche.
Yeah, I mean, I feel more excited about finale than ever because it is, you know, the 3rd of 3 races this year, so I just can't wait to see more racing, but it's, I would find it very hard to predict, other than what we've seen in the top 5, you know, from this weekend in the men's race, Day, Nicolai, Moya, Tordo Masters. I would probably guess that's going to be the same. Jesse, what do you think?
Well, I look at that top 3 and the issue, you've got to look at it objectively, and I don't see a reason why Adrian couldn't reproduce a performance like that. And I think it's important, you're not looking at him as just somebody who won the last race, you're looking at him as somebody who's won a race by 20 seconds in a field, as we said earlier on, that can often come down to easily within half a second.
And it, you know, I know he can't really predict your stages, but he's gone 1, 2, 3, 4, so first on first stage, second on second. And that seems to me someone who's managing the race very nicely. Yeah. You know, it's a very hard thing to do. He's probably just riding as fast as he can. But it's probably better to see that than the other way around. Someone like Jesse, who's had a big crash and then has to fight like mad to try and get back from that. We may go into that last race and you know, someone like Jesse might be thinking, right, I've got one last go to do this.
Mm. It is supposed to be wet this week. We are supposed to get a bit of rain because 2020. And I kind of think that, again, plays to Adrian's strengths. He's clearly not bothered about it. He's
slightly less descending overall.
Yeah, I'd say it'll be a smaller course in finale. We won't, for the first time in 7 years, we won't be on the iconic men's DH. That's obviously a closed course race. We're trying to keep spectators' crowds to a bare minimum. So that'll be a strange one because, you know, that's one of those iconic stages. Dunk, you've probably shot it most years. What are your favourite men's DH moments?
Gosh, I think, yeah, we've seen so many over the years of people riding mechanical acquired on that last stage, the last race of the year, giving it their all. You know, these kind of views of, am I going to injure myself? What will this mean for the rest of the season? They kind of diminish. And more often than not, at the end of the race, there's teammates pulling another rider back with a bike barely limping on its legs or being pushed along the road. Or
that's quite a long way back still as well, isn't it?
Yeah, we've seen, I think one year it was like Tordo was sat on somebody's seat while they were pedalling the bars because the rear wheel was that detonated on the bike and the other person just dragged it along because it couldn't bear weight anymore.
who was it? Innes was towed back by the Gehrigs with an inner tube. Stuff like that. There's always just, it breeds drama, that place. And I mean, I don't know.
It's iconic, but dare I say, not that much fun to ride.
No, I concur. Yeah. I always think it's a bit like Top of the World in Whistler, like you ride it, you're aware that you're riding something that's, you know, seen some of the great. I mean, Richie Rude's performances on Top of the World are some of the greatest rides EWS has seen. But that doesn't translate into having a lot of fun on your bike, and it's men's DH. It's just, I always get sucked in because the top bit, very fast, very flowy, you're in between those bushes, you think you're right, you think, you know, you come out of that top section, you think, I go professional, and then it gets pretty easy.
Sort of mast, it just drops towards the mad. And it's probably better to ride when it's taped, because when it's not taped, you just look at this mess and you're like, oh my, there's stuff everywhere.
Ta-tang, ta-ta-ta-tang, ta-ta-ta-ta-tang.
Boulders in the middle of the line that have rolled in there.
I agree. I'll go as far as say it's the only trail I know that rides better after 400 people have raced down it, because they're all on moderately the same line compared to when it's normally ridden, and it's just this mess. There's at least one clean line that you can get down.
I've never ridden it after the race. I'm always waiting at the final time check, but I've ridden it for course previews, and just when it's fresh and they've cleaned it out, and it's that white sort of limestone that you can't. It's very hard to see the holes, and it's very hard to see the steps, and you just, it has that thing as a below average bike rider that you feel like you're throwing the kitchen sink at it, and your bike is just going slower and slower and slower, and you're hanging off the brakes, and you're trying to get the thing turned. It'll be sad that it's not in the race, but I think we've got some pretty good stages lined up as well. Yeah.
Do you think that it not being the end of a championship, so there's no championship places to play for this year, we are going to see even fiercer racing than usual?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting as well, finale is usually quite a big race. This is quite a short finale from what I've seen of it, what I've seen of what, you know, the proposed course looks like. And that changes things as well, because there's less time to be had, so there's even less time to lose, isn't there?
It's still 50 plus K, so it's not the smallest day out. Stage one is the tough one, 444.
Queen stage is first, isn't it?
Is it? So that's, I forget the name of it.
But no rest day for the riders in between practice and race for this one. So whereas they were pedalling 2,000 metres here.
We're on Monday today. I'm exhausted and I've not ridden my bike all weekend. How long do they have to recuperate, these riders?
Practice Friday.
Practice Friday.
With a small shakedown session on Thursday. I'm sure they'll be.
Would you keep riding? Would you be out on the bike during the week and like?
Probably do, yeah. Some small rides, I would have thought. Yeah. Just to keep your eye in a little bit. I mean, expect Monday as a day off today.
If it's going to be wet all week and it's a potentially wet race, I wouldn't be surprised to find some of the more studious teams doing a fair bit of testing, finding out what works, shorter sessions on trails.
What would you be looking at, Neil, from a racer's point of view, in terms of what would you be changing on a setup? Would you change anything for the wet? Would you?
I mean, I don't know if I would. It was interesting to see Dave say he went down a spring rate on the shock changes.
Yeah.
I mean, tyres, obviously, you would definitely try and pick the right tyre, but I would have never thought about dropping a spring rate to get more traction.
That's it. It shows you the level he's operating at, because generally you find in enduro the consensus is you get very comfortable on a setup and you just ride it all the time.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few riders this week who have said exactly that. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Obviously, they're not allowed to ride the stages. The stages have been made public to the riders this week, so they can't ride those. They can get out into the other trails of Finale and test out things. So we'll see. I'm out there this week shooting stuff, so it'd be interesting to see if there's any riders out there.
Yeah, and we've got a course preview to shoot as well, so you get to experience a bit of it then as well.
Absolutely. Right, should we wrap it up? Because I feel like I want to go out and ride these e-bike trails.
Yeah, you should do.
There's still time of the day.
You can. Yeah, this is actually in Pietra. This is like, we're recording this at nearly 5 p.m. This is probably the nicest time of day to ride.
Right. Thanks, guys. Looking forward to the racing this weekend. Of course, it'll all be on GMBN, preview, shakedown, and the highlights as soon as we can get out after the race.